It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Now that the mostly lackluster late summer movie season is in our wake, it's time to look ahead to what fall has to offer. That means better films and festivals. Pittsburgh City Paper film critic Al Hoff is here to give us a preview of the major studio releases as well as some of the feature films at this year's Real Q, formerly known as the Pittsburgh International Lesbian and Gay Film Festival. Al Hoff, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be here.
The festival opens tomorrow. It runs through October 19th, and opening night is a twofer. The first film, Reaching for the Moon, is a biopic about a famous lesbian couple living in Brazil. What can you say about this film?
Well, it's essentially a melodrama based on real-life events. I mean, it's a little fictionalized, so you can't be totally sure it's exactly what happened. But the story is of Elizabeth Bishop, who's the Pulitzer Prize-winning American poet, who in the 1950s goes down to Brazil and meets a woman who is a fairly well-to-do architect who later would become famous for designing the park that runs along the beach in Rio de Janeiro. So the two of them start a relationship. It's complicated by a former lover, a child that is purchased, quote, adopted, some alcoholism, some nervous breakdowns. But it's, for all that sort of soapiness, it's rather like sensitively presented. And, you know, it's actually just an interesting story if you're somewhat familiar with these women or just like me. I didn't actually know very much about either of them.
Moving on to another film that's part of Real Q, and that's I Am Divine. It's a documentary about the late drag queen Divine, who, if you're a fan of John Waters' films, you cannot have missed Divine. He is credited with essentially remaking the drag queen concept, and I hear that you're a fan of Divine. Tell me about the documentary, and what did you think of it?
Yeah, I was looking forward to this because I've been seeing John Waters movies since the 70s when you had to go out at midnight to watch them in scary
Pink
theaters.
Pink Flamingos.
So I've been a fan of Divine for years, obviously. She was a star of John Waters' films. And I was actually very surprised to learn from this documentary how much I didn't know about her performing career. Most people, of course, associate her with John Waters' films. But she also had a nightclub act. She had like she did like disco music, and she toured Europe doing like that kind of nightclub singing. And she struggled very hard to essentially become an actor especially toward the end of her career. She unfortunately died young in his 50s. But it's actually a rather sweet and bittersweet film because the whole story of this kid, who's sort of the fat, bullied gay kid from the Baltimore suburbs, is able to transform himself into this sort of lovable freak, and it's very affirming and very powerful for him to become this character of Divine, who essentially takes all these negative things and turns them into something like fun and weirdly desirable. I mean, there was no disguising that this person didn't have like a slim physique or was, you know, conventionally beautiful. She exaggerated all these things like being overweight or shaving her hairline back.
And the makeup. I mean, there was no skimping on the makeup with Divine.
Exaggerated makeup. But in the same way, this role, even though it made her famous, became a trap because she was always seen as Divine and, you know, Glenn Milstead, which was the man's real name, actually longed to be a real actor, to do male roles and to be taken serious as someone other than Divine, the sort of crazy drag queen.
I'll mix in an interesting story. I actually sat next to him on a plane, had no idea.
Oh, really?
And somebody else pointed it out, and it was like, I could have been talking to him all this time. Skipping to the big closing night film, GBF, what can you say about that movie?
GBF is a pretty fun film. It is actually, one local note, the screenplay was written by a former Pittsburgher, George Northey, who grew up here. It is sort of it's an ensemble comedy that's sort of a mix of things like Clueless and Mean Girls and Pretty in Pink. It's set in a high school, and the premise is that the three sort of queen bee high school girls, you know, the sort of meanies, they decide that that year's best accessory is going to be a gay best friend, a GBF. So there's one gay guy in high school that they essentially accidentally out, and then they compete amongst themselves to see who can essentially have this guy on their arm for the prom. it's all sort of silly and snarky.
It sounds hilarious.
But, you know, it's something like Mean Girls or one of those kind of films. I mean, there's an underlying message, of course, about, you know, tolerance and, you know, reaffirming that it's okay to be gay and all those things. But it's all sort of played, exaggerated for laughs.
And Mean Girls was a good film. And most people would say that's the best film Lindsay Lohan ever made.
Sure. That's true. This doesn't have the same caliber of, like, famous stars, but it does have Megan Mullally, which people know from TV, and a couple of other people they'll recognize playing parents, and a pretty fun young cast.
On to Interior Leather Bar. It's a film from James Franco based on a sexually explicit Al Pacino film from the 1980s called Cruising. The premise here seems a bit odd. What is this about?
Yeah, this is one that I watched because I frankly am so old I remembered all the original controversy around
You're
Cruising.
You're not that old.
I'm old enough to remember this. Yeah, Cruising's a 1980 film that essentially Al Pacino plays a straight New York cop who goes undercover in the gay leather bars in New York City to catch a serial killer. There was a lot of controversy when it came out. The gay community protested it. They felt it was derogatory. And the other controversy was it was too sexually explicit, and apparently 40 minutes of footage was cut from the film. This movie, Interior Leather Bar, is James Franco and another director friend of his who sort of do a rumination on what might have been cut, and they sort of try and restage these sort of nightclub scenes. But it's sort of a film about making a film that is essentially working with actors and people portraying actors.
Well, the title sort of suggests that it's sort of an inside the filmmaker's studio type
yes.
of approach, because Interior Leather Bar refers to
It's like a script note.
Exactly. Yeah. Like Interior Subway, right. Interior Leather Bar.
It doesn't have a lot of plot, and it's mostly interested in examining issues of like masculinity and what it means to be straight and be straight to play gay or be gay and play straight, all within the context of entertainment.
Do you think James Franco does a good job of recreating the footage?
Well, I mean, I'm so old, again. I mean, immediately these people don't look like they live in the 70s. I mean, they're like all covered in tragic arm tattoos, which nobody had in the 70s.
You saw Alice Walker, Beauty and Truth, a documentary about Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Alice Walker, The Color Purple. A lot of people we know are interviewed in this film, like Steven Spielberg, Yoko Ono, Gloria Steinem, among others. What about this documentary?
This is a documentary I watched partly as a penance, because if I can include a personal story, I was once thrown out of an Alice Walker reading in Berkeley in 1984 because I burst into it drunk. And was so I felt obligated to maybe take a second look at Alice Walker and apologize for my behavior.
Do you feel better now that you said
I do.
Yeah, good.
I do.
Good.
If I sat next to her on a plane, I would apologize for that. I didn't know how loud I was being. You can imagine it didn't go over very well when she was living in the East Bay at the time and had just won the Pulitzer Prize. Her life is pretty fascinating. I mean, you know, she grew up a sharecropper's daughter on a poor Georgia farm and, you know, within a couple decades had won the Pulitzer Prize for The Color Purple. And people that are older, remember that was a controversial work. It got a lot of blowback from the black community. It also has some gay content, people may remember. And her life is very interesting, and she's interviewed extensively in the film, so she sort of places her personal experiences within the context of some of her literary work.
And again, the Real Q Film Festival gets underway tomorrow, runs through October 19th. It's at Central Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about movies with Pittsburgh City Paper film critic Al Hoff, and we have just a few minutes left to go over a couple of the major studio releases. If there is a must-see, it looks like it might be Gravity, starring George Clooney and Sandra Bullock. What about it?
Everybody's talking about Gravity. People in the supermarket are talking about Gravity.
Well, it brought in $100 million its first weekend, which made it, I think, it broke some kind of record, didn't it?
It's doing very well, and people should see it. It's an interesting concept, essentially, without giving away any spoilers. Two astronauts are essentially like stranded in space, literally just in their spacesuits, where, of course, there's no oxygen in space. They have no communication back to Earth. You know, it's almost sort of like a mystery, like how can the rest of the film happen? Is there any possible way that they can survive, or what do you do when you're in the middle of space to save yourself? It's just a two-man film. It's just the two of the actors. It's filmed in 3D, and I for once am recommending purchasing the 3D glasses, because it's just the sort of use of space in space is absolutely fantastic, and there's just some just some fantastic imagery where you're like, you feel like you're floating above space, looking at Earth and looking at the sunrise from above it. And it's a pretty good film, and it's nice and short. It's 90 minutes, which is my favorite kind of film.
People are raving about Sandra Bullock. Maybe another Oscar for her here?
Could be. It's hard to know now because all the big films aren't out yet.
Then there is Captain Phillips, a movie based on events that took place, real events that took place on the container ship Maersk, Alabama in April of 2009 after it was captured by Somali pirates. The Boston Globe says Tom Hanks is captivating as Captain Phillips. How's the rest of the movie?
It's a pretty good movie, actually. I was sort of expecting more of a sort of action thriller, rah-rah piece, and it's more thoughtful than you would anticipate, especially based on some of the trailers they've been screening. The director is Paul Greengrass, who makes sort of thoughtful docudramas. He made United 93, Bloody Sunday about Northern Ireland. He also made a couple of the Bourne movies. He essentially tells the story from both sides, so you see the four Somali pirates and like what you understand what their motivations are and what their risks are. And also Tom Hanks, who is the captain of the ship and who's eventually sort of kidnapped by the pirates and ends up on the lifeboat with them. And it's a sort of an interesting dilemma where both the head of the pirates and Tom Hanks as Captain Phillips, the leader of his small crew, are both completely out of their depths in this situation. It escalates to this sort of weird place where neither man knows what to do. And there's sort of a contest of wills between the two of them to salvage anything out of this, just even both of them surviving.
Wow. Sounds interesting. Captain Phillips, and that opens this weekend. Al Hoff reviews movies for the Pittsburgh City Paper and Essential Pittsburgh. Thanks, Al.
You're welcome.
Coming up, a look at the city's gay history through the eyes of an artist. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.